This episode of Podcats is brought to you by Jeff Civilico. Jeff has hosted 60-plus virtual events since March, ranging from corporate meetings to team-building workshops. Book Jeff at jeffcivilico.com. That's JeffCivilico.com.
No one knows, and everyone is waiting for something to happen, and we're waiting for the situation to clear. And we hope we're going to reopen safely for everyone, and that we can have live entertainment again.
Indeed. Welcome to Podcats. This is Cats, John Katsalamidis of the Las Vegas Review Journal. My column is called Cats, fittingly enough. Find it on page 3A every day and online all the time. My guest this week is the first Cirque du Soleil performer to ever headline his own show on the Las Vegas Strip. He has been the star of Magical Dream at two Las Vegas venues, most recently at the Magic Attic at Bally's. That's where this interview is held, as we talk magic, social media, and reality TV with the great Xavier Mortimer. Hello, everybody. Johnny Katsalamidis here at the Magic Attic with a magic man, Xavier Mortimer.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
It's good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you.
Yeah, we were just talking beforehand, and I was saying you never change. You know, the magic is you never age. Yeah. I don't understand how that is. What's the secret, Xavier Mortimer?
It's magic. I don't know.
Is it magic? It is magic, literally. Yeah. When did you move to Las Vegas?
7 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, I cannot believe that. I moved for 6 months. I had this contract with Cirque du Soleil, and I told them, I said, they offered me a year first, and I said, no. I live in France. I want to go back to France after 6 months, so I'm going to do the show with you guys and go back home.
The show was?
Michael Jackson won. And it was awesome. It was so awesome that I stayed.
For several years.
Yeah. 3 years, 1,200 shows, and then I met Alex Good, who told me, I was billing a show at the time. To go back to Paris and performing in Paris. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you're going to translate your show and you're going to do it here in Las Vegas in English. I was like,
Want to do it in your native language in your native country, right?
Yeah, that was more difficult.
Yeah, for those, and it's been a while since you were in MJ1. Tell people what you did in that show. Describe that.
I was pretty much the main character. There was four main characters, but I was the kind of the one who triggered the whole thing. I was stealing the glove at the beginning of the show, and that triggered a whole vortex where like paparazzis and evil people were running towards us, like trying to seize the glove that belonged to Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
and we were trying to escape, and the glove came alive, and all the things came alive, and it was very Cirque du Soleil. Of course, there was acrobats and dreams and stuff, and that was awesome. I loved the show. I loved the experience. It was 3 years that I will never forget. But I had to move on, and I opened my own show.
Was it Alex who convinced you to take your act, your talent outside Cirque?
Yes.
Was it him?
Okay. Yeah, it was so good that, I would say gave up. It's not the word, but you kind of like, I'm fine here. You know, I don't want to take a risk anymore. I'm really fine.
A lot of people have had long careers in Cirque doing the same thing every night.
And that's it, you know. But after a while, I felt I needed that because this is my personality. I like to challenge myself. I like to grow and go farther. And he convinced me. Alex is like that. His personality also is to like always move on. And he told me like, let's do it. I was like, sure. It was kind of I said yes, kind of like, okay, yeah, if you find a room, let's do it.
And everybody's like, looking for a room.
And,
right?
And like 3 months later, he calls me and say, I got a room for you. I was like, really?
What was that room originally?
It was Sin City Theater at Planet Hollywood.
Right.
It was a small room, like a comedy club. They had a topless show at night, and I had the 7 p.m. slot. It was fun. It was good. It was difficult for me because the room was small, and I was trying to get big illusions inside. But the experience was very interesting. First, it was successful. I would say we had people from the beginning until the end, and it grew. And Caesars was also behind us, and they helped us growing by bringing us to a bigger room here in Bali's.
Right. And that's where we are now. This used to be known as the Windows Showroom.
Yes.
It had acts like Wayne Newton had been in here, the Bronx Wanderers, music. Was it? And they decided to make it more of a magic themed destination.
Yeah.
With Xavier Mortimer in the middle of it. Yeah.
The room looks great. Mm-hmm. It looks like a mini theater with there's like 200 seats, and it's very like you can still have audience participation and a very close interaction with the audience without being huge. And the last rows, they're like, oh, what's happening on stage? And at the same time, the stage is big enough for me to perform my illusion. So I'm very happy here.
You've decided to take title your show The Magical Dream.
Yes.
And it's autobiographical, kind of tells your story in a way, or how you...
Yeah, kind of.
You're the lead character, at least, in it. It's a whimsical version of your life, it seems.
It's basically a dream where everything can happen. It's very, very Fellini, if you know that reference.
Federico Fellini.
Where we start in a dream and everything goes... around this team is magical. I have my dream girl. She could be like my magician assistant, but she's my dream girl. So we took a magic show and we made it like fit like a theme and a story, and there's something happening, and you want to know what's going to happen at the end. And also at the same time, there's like many tricks, very different throughout the show.
It seems to me that that's a lot more challenging than just coming out and doing this act, that act.
Oh yeah.
Here's my next act, and here's my assistant.
No, that's crazy. I think if you want a good show, you have to have a theme, because otherwise you lose the audience. It's like everything, storytelling. This is my thing. I love storytelling, and I think you can't just put magic out there. It's going to be boring after just a minute, because, okay, you fooled me once, you fooled me twice, but tell me, what's your thing? What world do you bring me in? And we decided to bring people into that world because it represents what I do. It's very visual. It's also whimsical. There's this character, would things happen to him. The girl who's not interested in him at first, and then she becomes in love, and at the end they walk away together.
Mm-hmm. It's very cute. Very cute. Since the, in watching you on stage, I'll say this, and this goes back to even the MJ1 days, it's clear that you've had physical training, pantomime training in your life. I mean, it's not something you just are born necessarily with. You've really been
maybe
taught. Well, I think it's something you can develop, though. I mean, it's obvious you've spent a lot of time doing that. Tell us about your training in that culture, in the mime culture, and how you can adapt it to what you do here in Las Vegas.
I always loved Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, all these movies where the character was not necessarily speaking, but was telling a story just with situations. And it's a lot of work. You know, it's even harder to tell a story than with words. Mm-hmm. And I knew I loved that. And I didn't know there was something, but I knew there was mime and Marceau and things to do with your body. And I loved the acrobatics and jumping everywhere. And I was in circus and I was like, I want to do a Buster Keaton and jump into a pie.
It's not too late. We can still add that.
I've done that.
You know, Marceau opened at the Paris. He was the first act at the Paris Theater, Marcel Marceau.
What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The very first performer. Yeah, it was a. I think it was a high roller night. I don't know that it was even. But it was certainly a one or two night show. But he was on stage at the Paris Theater here.
Marcel Marceau was here in Las Vegas. I would have.
I talked
never...
to Marcel Marceau.
That's awesome.
We exchanged a verbiage.
It's a huge figure. Yeah.
He was amazing. Incredible. Yeah.
Wow. That makes sense.
Started
this
in 99.
That's great.
Here.
Mm-hmm. But. Yeah, I actually went to Marceau school, and I went to mime school in France. We have mime schools, and I think you have some in America, physical comedy schools. Mm-hmm. I studied how to move my body and tell stories with my body, and I integrated that with magic, where my character is more like playing with things, you know, that brings a different energy to magic. And even when I do, like recently, I've been creating more outdoors illusions for video.
Right.
And everything is playful. Everything is like me just jumping on a board and suddenly I'm flying on a jump rope, or, you know, we just play games, and that makes it more less serious, less like, oh, look, I'm going to show you a magic trick now. We want to play with things, you know?
Yeah, you've really expanded your horizons since the shutdown. We've been talking about this a little bit. You know, before I came down here to interview you yesterday, I have a friend who's got his daughter's, I think, 24 years old. And I mentioned to them that I was going to be doing an interview with Xavier Mortimer. And she says, he's huge on TikTok. That was her response. And I go, yeah, he's huge on Now, explain how it was. You've got millions of followers on social media. And this really took off since basically March, right? March shutdown. How did you work to develop an audience there?
I just posted and posted. The thing is, I came to the theater on March 14th, as the day before everything shut down. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. I was here, say, hey, see you later. See you tomorrow, guys.
Did you really think that you were going to see everybody tomorrow?
I heard Cirque du Soleil was about to close, and I was like, there's a chance that something's going to happen, but you don't know. You know, you feel like it's just before the storm, and you're like, I feel the air now. There's something happening. But I had no idea, no. I woke up, and then Alex called me and said, nope, you're not going to work tonight. You just leave everything. And I left everything, and I had a double set on a cruise ship that is still there.
It's out at sea somewhere? Or it's docked?
It's just.
Which liner is it?
Royal Caribbean.
Royal Caribbean?
Yeah. And it's sitting there sitting there for 7-8 months.
When was the last time you were on Royal Caribbean?
In March.
In March also? Yeah. You know, I was on a cruise with them in November. Yeah, I did a shakedown on the Oasis. They redid the refurbished
Oasis.
It's
a big one.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, and you know this having performed, I had not been on a cruise before, but I was struck by the scale of those watercraft, ships.
That's
awesome. This is not a boat. This is like the Aria or Bellagio at sea, isn't it?
It's the business in cruise ships is expanding crazy, and they have, you know what? They have good access. They have Cirque du Soleil on some of the cruises.
Yes.
They have... Mm-hmm. I think they had Blue Man Group. They have like big.
They have a
names.
Lot of headliners in Las Vegas. In fact, when I was, leaving the ship and coming onto the ship to perform to headliners, Earl Turner from Las Vegas. He's on it. Santa Fe and the Fat City Horns has been depicted in their video. They like to pick over our headliners in Las Vegas.
Yeah, they picked me.
I know. Is it different being on the water as opposed to this showroom, how the audiences are? I can imagine it's a different crowd.
It's a different crowd. It's great. I love every different crowd. The only thing that's funny is I not only do magic, but I have a juggling act with the Diabolo that is extremely precise. Like, I've been training so many years to... I can't let the Diabolo fall because it's very thing with the violin and it has to be with the music, you know. And I train so much, so it very rarely falls. And on the water, the boat was like having waves of. I was like, no, and it was like, no, and the chair was, because I do a stunt on the chair at this point, and the chair was heading back. I was like, no.
Do you just work with that and just become slapjack? Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin comes to play then, right?
You have to do it.
Yeah. I was watching it was a showroom show. It was a Cirque-like show, but it wasn't a Cirque du Soleil show. It was that type of show. It was kind of like a wow and extravaganza styled show. And the boat moved like that when they were doing a technical act. And this was the rehearsal show. But you felt that ship move. And I'm like, oh, man. I said, I get this. This is, and everybody stopped, you know, like, ooh, you forget you're on the water until that happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really incredible. We had a comic. I saw a comic. You'll appreciate this joke. He said, he was always on the cruise ship. He said, this boat is so big, it has a bad neighborhood. That's what I felt. Yeah. You don't want to go up the fifth level. It's a bad neighborhood. It's like the bad side of the tracks on the boat.
That's funny.
Have they told you when you're going to be back on the cruise ships?
No, no one knows Vegas, cruise ships, anywhere. I think everyone's waiting for something to end this thing, this situation we're in, you know? It's not funny for a lot of people.
Yeah, I've asked that specifically because I understand the cruise ships are going to be doing cruises. They're booking cruises, and they're going to have entertainment on those.
Yeah.
Maybe even faster than Las Vegas is supposed to come back, I think.
It depends where. I've heard in Europe they're starting to reopen, but I was on the Caribbean one, and they say there's no chances that you might wait for next year now. Mm-hmm. No one knows, and everyone is waiting for something to happen and waiting for the situation to clear. And we hope we're gonna reopen safely for everyone, and that we can have live entertainment again, because I think it's too bad to...
We're all in the same ecosystem when it comes to that. We're all in this...
Yeah, it's
literally in the same boat.
It's not just my profession. I mean, everything that I've been doing, I've been shut down. But I do my videos right now, but it's just, I feel it's sad. You know, we need to be together. We need to enjoy live entertainment and laugh together and have emotions together, and I think it's missing right now.
I felt that you were part of the whole thing we did Friday night over at Melody's house, the last podcast we did, and I was struck when you came out. I was looking, and I was like, God, I haven't seen Xavier in forever. In person, it was really, everybody was saying like, it's good to actually be in the same space with other people, you know, our friends, you know.
Yeah,
and I felt that really, you know, really a lot. Tell me about how you got connected with Jason Derulo, and did that.
It was very simple. Basically, I started to post on TikTok and on Facebook also. I've been helped by a good friend of mine named Rick Lax.
I know Rick.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Rick is is very
great,
good
magician.
With Facebook and all the stuff. And he said to me, Xavier, you should publish more. I've seen your TikTok. You're good, but try to go on longer format videos. Try to do videos on Facebook. And I was like, okay, let's try it. and I filmed, and after like 5-10 times, you like start to understand the process and everything that's happening around how to make a video for social media. This is not TV, this is not movie, this is like a very specific kind of entertainment. You have to get the audience, you have to convince them, even though they don't know you, because they stumble on you on social media. Basically, they see a video, they're like, I want to watch that. Uh-huh. And that's how it works.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Or I don't want to watch that. And you want to be in the part where they want to watch you.
You got to win over an audience in a different kind of way.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah. Everything has to happen very quickly. And you have to be very clear with what you want to do. You have also to be fun, entertaining. You have to make people want to see you. You know, if you're boring, they're not going to want to see you. And TikTok was a huge success for me. Like, almost in 2 months, I got like 1 million followers.
Had you been on TikTok before?
No.
Before March?
Yes, a little bit. I was already. So I started exactly in December.
Okay.
Rick told me, he said, oh, you're doing those small little videos for Instagram, I see. He said, you should try the new thing, TikTok. It's going to be trending soon. I was like, okay. And you know, and I asked people, I said, TikTok, this is for kids. Don't go there. And I said, you know what? I have these videos, so let's just post them. Let's just
they already
put them
existed,
out there.
Right?
And I had an account. I didn't care about it. I just post. And one day, one video overnight get 4 million views. And I'm like, what? And I have instantly.
Overnight? 4
overnight,
million?
Oh, yeah. It was the Walmart thing where I was doing a magic with a credit card and I was paying. The lady was like, what? Mm-hmm. It was fun. But overnight. And I get from that video only, I get like probably 150,000 followers. I was like, in my entire life, I've never seen that many followers. This is 10 times the amount of people that was in the main city when I was a kid.
That's a big number. I don't care who you are.
350,000. And I call Alex and say, hey, I'm becoming famous.
I can't walk the streets of TikTok,
wherever that
is.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm motivated now. I'm like, okay, let's do another one. And I film. And you know, it's funny because when you start to have those followers, you're like, I'm gonna hit it. I'm gonna get 1 million followers now.
Yeah, you can't. I would expect you get kind of preoccupied with the results, right?
And it's it's like adrenaline, you know. I've been failing on videos, and I feel so bad and almost depressed because I'm like, no, I want the views. And I remember today a friend came to my place because we were rehearsing something. I said, my last video didn't do well. I had 8.3 million views. And I just realized that was a big number. No, that's crazy. And I didn't know. And he looked at me like, really? I was like, yeah, no, that's a good number.
Well, this is with no real outreach, right? You don't. It's not marketing. You don't have to have billboards.
Yes.
I mean, really? I'm stunned at the reaction to this.
Yeah, it worked so well. Some videos got, I got the most viewed video on the internet, no, on Facebook in June with the levitation on the wall. And I heard that it was the second most viewed on the internet. And the first one was Baby Shark.
Oh, geez. You're in Baby Shark.
I was just number two on
the
whole internet.
What you need
to do
is do a Baby Shark video
I'm
yourself.
I'm
going to
sing Baby Shark doing an illusion now.
It'll break TikTok. Tilt it.
But it was awesome. And all these people were like, really? You have a show in Las Vegas? I didn't know that. I'm a local. I'm going to check you out. When the shows are reopening, we're going to see you. And a lot of people like suddenly hear about me. Mm-hmm. And this is awesome. This is the best. And I talked about it to Alex and Caesar Entertainment and Damien and Jason.
Yeah.
They were really happy and they were supportive. You know, they're like, oh, that's very good if you want to film here. They give me a room. We filmed the video in a room here.
Good.
I haven't released it.
That's big of them. Because I'm thinking, you know, when you're looking for an entertainer and these, you know, when things do get open back up, you probably want to find somebody who has some kind of social media reach. You know, let's find somebody who has a reach in TikTok or on Facebook. You created that on your own already being a headliner. So that's a real advantage for the hotel.
Yeah, that's great. And the thing is, I hope it's going to develop the ticket sales and bring more people to the show. It should, because so many people, I see that in the comments, a lot of people say, oh, and even on TikTok and on Facebook and Instagram, some people comment like, oh, I've seen your show. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. I can't wait for you guys to reopen, and people are very supportive, so it's great.
You were selling really well here up
yeah,
until
I, was
the,
doing
I
well,
know I
yeah.
know we're tracking that in the weeks before. I was always asking you, like, how are the counts, Eric Xavier? And I'm just wondering what your future is in your conversations with Alex and with Caesars Entertainment about your long-term future in the company. Are you going to want to be the static headliner here at Magic Attic, or do you have your ideas you know, beyond even this room?
So to be honest, I think no one knows, and we're preparing already a comeback, and I hope this is going to be we will adapt. That's one thing. We don't know if this room is gonna reopen or mm-hmm. if another room is gonna reopen. We have no idea what's gonna happen. We're discussing with Caesars, and they've been very supportive, and we've been with them from the beginning, so it's important to continue to grow, you know, together. I'm happy here in this room. Mm-hmm. I'm also working on Big Illusions, and I would love one day to put more like a production show or something that would be bigger. But I know I have to make my way and grow up. And I think this social media thing is going to help a lot. So.
Yeah, I would like to know. We'll see how that transfers, because I've heard different results, to be honest, on people who have really big YouTube numbers or
yes.
Facebook numbers and still have a tough time selling tickets for whatever
yes.
reason, which I've never understood. So, you know, you say I've got, yeah. you know, millions of followers on YouTube, but I still am having trouble filling my room.
It depends the kind of social media you do. There's in my opinion, there's people like, let's say, Dude Perfect, for example, who are big on YouTube and they're selling out arenas, you know, mm-hmm. because they are very clear with the marketing on social media. This is trick shots. This is what we do. Uh-huh. And I'm trying to be very clear with what I do. I'm not doing social experiments, or I'm doing magic. This is me. And if I can't post for a week, I'm not going to post for a week, but you're going to see some magic. You're going to view me as a magician, and you're going to know that I have a show in Vegas. And I hope
right.
this is happening, because this is what I want to do. You can do videos about anything. You can show your fridge and say, oh, this is the vegan thing that I brought last. You see, but that doesn't bring people into your room, because they don't see you as an entertainer, but more as a figure of social media. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's very complicated, but I'm really hopeful that it's going to help, because I see the comments, and people really like, I see so many people saying, we're going to check you out when we come back to Vegas.
That's, I can imagine that. Is it possible to make money off your social media platforms?
Yeah, yeah. TikTok.
Are you sustaining a lifestyle through that?
Yes, you okay. can. Oh, and you can make good money, like influencers. I mean, YouTubers, you can see them. Some are very rich.
Yeah.
Again, it's all what you want to do. I want to keep doing magic, and I want to do some good content. So I have already my kind of niche, you know, But TikTok is starting to pay for videos now. Every time you get a million views, they give you like...
So what's the business model? Do they get advertising revenue and then they turn around and...
That's
and
it. Basically, you? Facebook, okay. YouTube, they take all the advertisement money and they give it to the influencer, less their share.
It's amazing how much money can be made.
And the good thing is also that you keep entertaining people, you know. It's a new way of providing that. Like, who would have known that magic would be viewed 300 million times on a video on Facebook like 6 years or 7 years ago?
It was forever.
It's incredible. And I think that's not going to stop. I think people are going to consume more and more entertainment through social media.
Mm-hmm. We never did get to the end of the Drillo question, where this all started. How did you guys get together and describe the video and the project?
So Jason saw my TikTok and he was like, oh, he just contacted me on Instagram, say, hey, I like what you do. I was like, really? Me?
That's interesting.
You're talking to me? Me? Really?
You're a fan.
Is it my page? Are you sure you're talking the right page? So I say, yeah, I love your videos. And I say, I love your art and your videos too and everything. And he invited me to Los Angeles and we taped like three, four videos in a couple hours. Yeah. It was great. I came with tricks and stuff. And he said to me, oh, can I do a trick with you? Because at first I said, oh, I can do that to you. You know, like a magician would do a trick to a celebrity. I was like, he wanted to do a trick. I was like, oh, I can teach you that. And then we ended up doing a battle, you know?
Oh, okay.
And that was really fun because he's fun. He's a very, very good performer. He has good face expression and the comedy was really great. And his team, they're awesome. They were filming and editing the whole thing. So they made it look really good. Mm-hmm. But it was fun. That was great. I wish I could do. I want to do more collaboration and stuff like with artists and stuff. Yeah.
Has that led to any other?
Collaborations? We've got some that are confirmed, but we'll see. You know, the future. It's just work in progress. You never know what's gonna happen. Maybe that was gonna be the only one. Maybe I'm gonna start doing more collab. It depends, like the feeling. But I like to be creative. I've taken this game of social media, like it's really fun. I love it. And I think it's going to happen again. We're going to do more stuff. Yeah.
Another project that's out there in the offing is the Downtown Las Vegas reality show. And I know you're part of that. It's this existing reality-like series. It's being shopped around to different platforms right now, and you were in it. Steve Conley, Mike Hammer, Murray, Melody, Rob Schneider had a cameo on Saturday Night Live. What can you tell us about your involvement in that, and where is that going to go?
That was fun. That was a series. They asked me to be a character in the series, and the more they were filming, the more they... my character grew with the series. They call me, would you do episode 3? And I'm like, sure. Would you do episode 7? Okay.
Can you be the star of the show?
No.
Can we rename the show after?
But they kept like adding me, and I really like the crew, and everyone's like really fun. And the concept was very interesting, where it was not a reality, it was not a fiction, but still, and I was doing my magic tricks in it. And that was really fun. Uh-huh. I'm not going to spoil in case it ends up on Netflix or a platform you can watch it, but there's some really fun moments. It's about Vegas, so we're proud of it.
Right.
A movie about Vegas. We want that. We want more of that. We want young people to know that there's live entertainment in Vegas and there's an active scene, and it's not for old people. It's for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That's great that we have a limelight like this on Vegas.
Well, it's interesting. I was talking to Patrick Hughes from the Fremont Street Experience about this, and it's existing content pre-pandemic that is ready.
Yeah.
Now you don't have to produce it. It's already finished.
Yeah.
So it's you might be also a star on that platform too. You never know.
I mean, it's funny because I was, all my life, I was a live performer, and I started to film this thing and social media, and it switched, like, and you learn that nothing is granted, nothing is Like you can just go and try new things, and sometimes you find something amazing and it changes your life.
Yeah. Yeah, you never know. You just got to keep in play, right?
Yeah, exactly. Playing.
And adapting.
Adapting. You
know? Yeah. And Alex is that way too. I've known him throughout his career. Alex is good. Yeah. He's always been that way too. He's always
Alex a good had partnership a lot of projects, and he's very supportive. He found the investors for the show too, so he's a big part of the show.
Yeah,
you know?
That's really big.
He had to go back in France for work, but he wants to come here and do more projects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I'm in conference with him quite a bit, and I know he's all about Xavier right now. So
oh, really?
Good. Yeah.
I
can report that.
Are you glad to hear?
Are you optimistic about the future?
Oh, always.
I love it.
It's we're in the worst time, so it can't. I mean, no, I'm not gonna say it. I don't want to jinx.
Oh yeah, can't
it's going to be. It's going to be better. It's going to be better. We're gonna go out, and I think we're gonna. People are going to be so happy to be at a show. They're gonna scream and jump and.
Yeah. That's just you on stage. All right, Xavier Morton, I know we got you've got stuff you got to do, and we're gonna continue this conversation around the all the way down the line. And when you reopen, I'll be there.
Thank you so much.
Whenever
I would
it
love
is,
to have you back. Yep,
I will be there. You know that. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you.
Thanks once more to Xavier Mortimer for joining us this week on Podcats. We'll be back next Monday and every Monday, so be sure to subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. What is happening in the column, you might be asking yourselves? Well, Zach Bagans has been making news once again. He's opened the Tiger King exhibit at his Haunted Museum in Las Vegas. This attraction is filled with such items as the Tiger King Park sign, some of Joe Exotic's wacky clothes, and a section of the wall showing the bullet hole from Travis Maldonado's accidental suicide. Also, Bagans has added to his John Wayne Gacy exhibit with some of his mass murderer's artwork from prison, and we hear from Bagans' girlfriend Holly Madison, who has launched a new YouTube series and talked of her time at the Playboy Mansion and how she and Bagans met. This all leads to a Ghost Adventures Halloween special. Las Vegas contestants have gone 4-4-4 in America's Got Talent. Jonathan Goodwin, Max Major, Alan Silva, and Brett Loudermilk are all still alive in the NBC contest show. Major, Loudermilk, and Goodwin are scheduled to perform this week on the live semifinals. Saddles and Spurs Saloon has been allowed to return live music to the stage. That happened last week. The business owner and musician Bobby Kingston had already returned musicians to the saloon on Labor Day weekend. OSHA had told Kingston to pull musicians from the club for some non-safety violations on August 29th, but now the music is back officially, and so was I, over the weekend. Lake of Dreams at Wynn Las Vegas has been revamped. We have a projected dance scene, a disco ball, a floating star, and a giant frog singing Somewhere Over the Rainbow. All that and more in Cats. That closes out another episode of Podcats. Thank you, Frankie Moreno, for our theme song, The Biggest Cat in Town. Keep up with me, or try to, on the Review Journal website, or at Johnny Katz on Twitter, at Johnny Katz 1 on Instagram, and tune in next Monday to the next installment of Podcats. And I'm the biggest cat in town.